Hi, you guys. It's your girl, Dr. Natasha Burnett, and this is Bluff City Crime. Welcome back. Okay, so on this episode, I am going to be discussing the murder of Elton Hayes, a 17-year-old black teenager killed by Shelby County Sheriff deputies and Memphis Police Department officers on October 15th, 1971. Let's get into this story. On October 15th, 1971, 17-year-old Elton Hayes, 14-year-old Calvin McKissack, and 15-year-old George Barnes were joyriding in Barnes' father's truck. Normal teenage behavior. A New York Times article from October 23rd, 1971, stated that the boys made several stops and then headed home after midnight. That is when they noticed a police car behind them around 1:55 a.m. Now, I have not read anything that details what the boys were doing between heading home and when this police chase started. And the police chase started around 1:55 a.m., and that's nearly a two-hour gap. And I'm not sure how far after midnight they headed home, but that's neither here nor there. There's some dispute that Barnes, who was a driver, made a U-turn which caught the attention of police. But in his account of what happened, he does not mention a U-turn. He does say that he panicked when the police pulled up behind them. And even though it's not explicitly said that Barnes sped up. Yeah, I think you can kind of infer here that he sped up. He didn't want to get stopped by the police, or he was nervous by the police pulling up behind him. The chase through Memphis was joined by other police officers as the first car radioed that they were being forced off the road by Barnes's truck. Now, how are you being forced off the road, but you behind the truck chasing them? That's the first lie. When the chase reached Capelville, Barnes said he pulled the handbrake and the truck slid halfway into a ditch. Okay, and so going back to the New York Times article, Barnes says that the reason they stopped and slid into a ditch was because there was a roadblock up ahead, and he said he didn't want to kill anybody, and he skidded to a halt. That is when the policemen opened the doors, snatched them out of the car, and the beatings ensued. Now, for a little bit of context for the people that know the Memphis area, the chase started on South Parkway west of Castalia, which is South Memphis, and ended in Capelville, which is in the southeastern part of Memphis, close to, I think, Olive Branch, Mississippi. This was about a five mile chase. So I'm just trying to give a little bit of context for the people in Memphis that are listening and that know the area, so they can just kind of get into their head where this chase started and where it ended. Moving on. By then, a caravan of police officers, or police cars rather, with sirens blaring and blue lights flashing, were behind them. After the truck came to a stop, 34 policemen were on the scene and rushed from their cars to the ditch where the truck had slid into and pulled the three boys from the truck. Barnes recalled that he knew they were going to have to take a beating. And this is a direct quote from an article that I read on the case, where Barnes said, "Three Negroes in a truck, beating them and driving them in their fast cars. They had to beat us. There wasn't any wreck. We just slid into the ditch." Barnes recalled that nobody was hurt until police officers showed up. He recalls grabbing his head and then being poked in the ribs with police officers' nightsticks. He said he could not see who the officers were, but they knocked him down and started kicking him in his side and his stomach. He lost sight of his two companions, that's Elton Hayes and Calvin McKissack, and all he could hear was cops calling them everything but a child of God. Barnes also recalled getting up, but still getting beaten and seeing someone being carried out of the ditch and put into a sheriff's car. And he assumed they were headed to the hospital. He recalls later being put into the back of a police car where, quote, they cursed us all the way to town. And one time one of them spun around in the seat, shook his finger and said, don't you know if you had killed those officers in that car, it would have been worse for you than raping a white woman? We'd sure enough killed you and left you laying where you fell. That is a direct quote from the article I researched on this topic. Calvin McKissick recalls, quote, all I knew was blue shirts and nightsticks. They were cussing us, calling us niggers, beating up on us. I heard Elton on the other side of the truck saying, it wasn't me. It was George who was driving the truck. It was the other guy. Then I didn't hear Elton anymore. End quote. Barnes said he became aware that a black sheriff's deputy was standing above him with a foot on his face. Then the lieutenant took command because Capelville was outside of the jurisdiction of the Memphis Police Department. And this is likely because Capelville was the county part of Shelby County, and the Memphis Police Department didn't have jurisdiction in the county parts. It was said that he insisted on getting prompt medical attention, and this is the lieutenant, who is Lieutenant Wilkes, by the way. I will be naming these officers later, but this is Lieutenant Wilkes, a black officer, Lieutenant Theodore Wilkes, who took command of the scene, and he insisted on trying to get prompt medical attention for Elton Hayes and refused to cooperate with the white policemen who were concocting the story that his severe injuries were a result of a traffic accident. And in fact, the first official police report of this incident stated that the truck overturned at a corner at 60 miles per hour, throwing Elton from the truck. Lieutenant Wilkes was reported to have told the policeman that he was going to say in his report that the truck was undamaged. So it seems here that Lieutenant Wilkes was trying to do the right thing, but the white officers wanted to say Elton's injuries came from a traffic accident. The next thing Calvin McKissack remembered was being thrown into a police car with Barnes and being taken to Gaston Hospital and handcuffed to a bed. The next morning, a hospital official told him that Elton was dead. He said he was also told that the truck had been wrecked, throwing him and Elton out the car. That's lie number two. The police also claimed to have a photo of an unloaded shotgun on the front seat of the truck, but Barnes's dad said that the shotgun was hidden behind the seat, and the boys said they had no knowledge of the shotgun. Okay, I know I just started, but let's do a real fast recap. We got three black boys, teenagers, ages 14, 15, and 17, driving around in one of the boys' daddy's truck, minding their business, you know, doing what teenage boys do, whatever they do. A police cruiser pulls up behind them for whatever the reason, whether it was a U-turn, which U-turns are not illegal unless there's a sign that specifically says no U-turns. That's not illegal. Or maybe the cops were just fucking with them because it's 1971 and you got three black teenagers in a truck. Maybe you just want to fuck with them. Or maybe they just happen to pull behind them with no intention and driver panic because, oh shit, it's the cops. You know, whatever the reason, these cops behind them, George panics and a chase ensues. Okay, roadblock set up 5 miles away. They slide into a ditch trying to avoid the roadblock. 30 fucking four police officers snatch the boys out of the car. They get to beating them. Okay. Now, if we're looking at two officers per car, that's 17 cars potentially that were chasing them. Maybe more if it's just maybe one officer in the car. Who knows? You know, the it's the possibilities are infinite. Anyway, and with racial tension already going on in the city, I would be afraid too. Okay. Next, Elton Hayes is taken to the hospital while George Barnes and Calvin McKissack are thrown into a car together and taken to the hospital as well, but also placed into custody while they're in the hospital. So they handcuff them to the beds. Okay, next day, they tell the boys, Elton is dead and y'all car is tore up. Okay. Now we got a black sheriff's deputy who tried to get Elton medical attention right away and who seems like he wanted to try to be honest about the injuries, but he's rebuffed by the white officers on the scene who says, listen, this was a car accident. Okay. Barnes's dad went to the impound to check on his truck and he said it was in near perfect condition and his daughter took pictures. Elton's autopsy showed that his death was the result of a traumatic incident, and we will get to those findings later. And then Attorney General Phil Connally called the death a probable homicide. The following Monday, remember this happened October 15, 1971, the following Monday, 23 policemen were relieved of duty with pay. Okay, recap over. Let's move on. Elton's death, rightly so, ignited the resentment and anger in the black community of Memphis, which sparked protests and rioting. During the riots, the day after Elton's killing, the Black Panther Intercommunal Service newspaper reported that Robert Reed Jr., only 3 years old, was run over and killed by police officers while police officers were responding to a firebombing. And this fueled tensions even more. The article notes that the police said they were sorry, but it doesn't note that there was any punishment because of that or any implications on the police officers because of that. So I have to pull something else separate up on Robert Reed Jr., this poor baby who was killed in the midst of this rioting that was going on in the midst of another child that was killed in the black community of Memphis. Okay, moving on. Memphis, just like many other cities in the South and nationwide, have always had high racial tension, and this death of a young black boy fueled those tensions. And after a previous incident the year before in 1970, in which 8 people had been shot over a 5-month period by policemen, the NAACP, they fed up. They fed up, okay? They held hearings on the administration of justice, focusing on police brutality, bail bond reform, street crime, and court reform. Despite growing public concern, nothing changed in law enforcement's attitude toward black citizens and black defendants. This sounds very familiar to me. It sounds very 2023. And this is in 1971. You would think we would have had some progress by now in regard to police brutality and street crimes and court reform. And we've had a little bit of bail bond reform, but that just happened. But in 40 years, I mean, come on. Anyway, let's move forward. In an article from the New York Times, it was reported that on December 9th, 1971, nearly 2 months after Elton's murder, a total of 9 law enforcement officers were indicted and charged in this incident. 3 Shelby County Sheriff's deputies, including Black Deputy Lieutenant Theodore Wilkes, and 1 Memphis Police Patrolman were charged with first-degree murder. The names are as follows: Lieutenant Theodore Wilkes, Deputy Patrolman Edward Bonham and Johnny Roberts, and Memphis Patrolman Michael Doherty. They were charged with first-degree murder and given bonds of $10,000. In today's money, that will equal up to $73,283.21. 4 Memphis police officers were charged with assault to murder, and they were Danny Davis, Larry Skelton, James Dye, and William Graves. Their bonds were set at $2,500, which in today's money is equal to $18,320.80. A ninth Memphis police inspector, Harold Ray, was charged with a misdemeanor of neglect of duty. Lieutenant Wilkes was the only black law enforcement officer charged in this offense. Now I got to give it to the 1971 grand jury because they came up quick with the indictments and charges. Okay. By today's standards. Nowadays it takes several months to even some years to convince a grand jury to indict and for officers to be charged with the murder of a civilian. And especially if there's a racial dynamic to it. But while the indictments came down pretty quickly, it would be 2 years before the officers actually went to trial. So on the second year anniversary, exactly the second year anniversary of Elton Hayes' murder, October 15th, 1973, jury selection started for the trial of these nine officers. Now, they was all tried together. I don't know if today, if we had nine police officers, to put on trial, that we would be like, oh yeah, we're going to, make one big trial instead of maybe separating them out, because putting nine officers on trial at one time seems crazy to me. Cause it can take so long, but we're going to move forward. The trial started October 15, 1973, jury selection started for that trial, and that jury selection itself, just the jury selection, my people, took 13 and a half days, nearly 2 weeks before the jury selection. The jury was selected. Now, I imagine that, you ain't gonna find a person that's not biased in Shelby County. Maybe you got to go outside the county. Maybe you got to go to Fayette. Maybe you got to go to Davidson. Maybe you got to go to Tipton or something for somebody to be unbiased and not have heard about or not be moved by the events of this case. So I imagine that it did take them some time to come up with a jury that was going to be unbiased or felt like they were going to be unbiased enough to be jurors in this case. 13 and a half days is crazy, crazy, because normally in my trials, it only takes them a few hours to pick a jury. But we're talking about law enforcement. We're talking about 9 defendants. No telling how many attorneys are wrapped up in this, because they can have one or more attorneys each. And all of them using their different challenges and all this stuff, weaning out the jury pool and all this stuff. It takes a long time. But anyway, we're going to, move away from that. The trial started finally on October 30th, 1973. And let me just mention that the officers were only charged with the murder of Elton Hayes and the beating of Calvin McKissack. Okay, I am not sure, nor have I found anything that explains why no charges were brought for the beating of the actual driver, George Barnes. The trial was held in Shelby County Criminal Court Division 6, which was overseen by Judge Otis Higgs, at the time the only black judge in Shelby County, who I have had the pleasure of working with over the years until his death in 2013, and whose courtroom is coincidentally the main courtroom that my unit works out of now. Anyway, the trial went pretty much as expected, with the defense claiming that the boys were drunk and trying to crash into them and injure them, which is nuts because none of the officers were charged with anything involving George Barnes, who, like I keep mentioning, was the actual driver. Now, this is a direct quote from the opening statement of the prosecuting attorney. "Before you worry too much about poor Mr. Barnes, poor McKissack, or poor Hayes, listen to the proof as to what crimes these individuals were committing. Keep in mind that these young men in parentheses, police, that's who he's talking about, when they put on a badge, are not endowed with superhuman strength, patience, or judgment. We can all say 2 years later, maybe it would have been better to do this or that. We are not faced with the situation of a felon fighting you in a ditch. Sir, I'm not even going to, let's move on. The prosecution's first witness was Elton's mother, Miss Gussie McGowan, who said she had never seen her son drink. She did say that she had smelled alcohol on his breath, which I feel like is not unusual. He's 17. And teenagers, I guess during that time, they was a little bit more mature than our teenagers are now. Our teenagers now are boobs. But back in 1971, you know, it was a little bit more maturity going on. But anyway, she said she never saw her son drinking. She never saw him drinking. She never saw him drunk. And it's noted here that he was 6 feet tall and weighed 168 pounds. On a side note, law enforcement has always made black kids, I don't give a damn what height they are and what weight they are, they always looked at us as adults. Always look at black kids as adults, even though they're clearly kids. And I think that it was something of note for it to be mentioned that he was 6 feet tall and 168 pounds, because it gives weight to the thinking of the police that this is a man and not a 17-year-old. Elton's mother said that when she arrived at John Gaston Hospital at 5:30 a.m. on October 15th, following the beating, that he was unable to talk to her. Her son was unable to speak to her. She said that they came by on the doctors, the hospital staff came by her on a stretcher, and that her son was all bloody and swollen, and that there was nothing, they said there was nothing they could do. He didn't have a chance. The second witness, Dr. James Bell, who was a medical examiner for Shelby County at the time, testified that Elton died from 9 blows to his head. 6 of the blows were strong enough to cause brain damage, and 4 were sufficient to crack his skull. The doctor said that 3 holes had been drilled by surgeons into Elton's skull to remove fluid and relieve pressure. He said that Elton's blood alcohol level would have been 0.10 to 0.18 at the time of the incident. Under state law at that time, 0.10 was the limit set on the ability of a person being able to drive a vehicle safely. Let me just say again that Elton was not fucking driving. So I'm not sure why they even bringing up his blood alcohol level. He was not driving. And the person that was driving, they didn't even charge the police officers with anything involving him. So his blood alcohol level is irrelevant, in my opinion here. Patrolman E.L. Mullins said he was involved in the chase and loaded his shotgun in hopes of shooting out the truck's tires because the vehicle tried to ram his patrol car. He was riding with Inspector James Dyer, who swerved to miss the truck and ran into a median on Lamar and Prescott and blew out 2 of their tires. Quote, up until the time the chase reached Lamar, there was nothing involved except traffic charges, he said, adding that he thought the truck driver was trying to ram his car. It was at this point that police emotions, and let me just say that again, police emotions, ego, escalated when Patrolman Mullins made a radio call stating that a pickup truck was trying to ram their police car. Other police cars responded and joined in the chase, which more than likely, you know, it scared the boys even more. Okay, we already got one police car behind us. I'm too scared to stop. And now here comes some more police cars behind me. I don't know if I'm going to stop or not. Because what y'all going to do when we stop? George Barnes, the driver, testified that he could not identify any of the law enforcement officers involved in the incident, saying, quote, "When you see somebody coming at you, you don't look at them. So you'll know what he looks like if you see him again. You don't want to see him again." He said that Elton was not injured when the truck slid into a ditch on Stevenson Road. They turned and saw officers coming at them. He told his passengers, quote, "We're going to get jumped or hauled into jail or get killed," end quote. Prosecutors said that the law enforcement officers mistakenly thought Elton was driving the truck, which is why he became a target for the most brutal beating. I'm not sure how they came to this conclusion, and none of the articles say why they came to this conclusion, because if they snatched him out of the car, you snatching George out of the driver's seat and you snatching Elton and Calvin from, if we're in a truck, a pickup truck, the middle and door of the passenger side. So I'm not sure why they targeted Elton as the driver when he clearly was not the driver. I didn't read anywhere where the boys got out of the truck when they slid into the ditch. They sat in the truck until the officers stopped and came and snatched them out of the truck. So I'm not sure how they made the distinction that Elton was the target and was the driver. It makes no sense. George says he was ordered to get up, but as soon as he did, he was knocked down again. He then said a tall black officer, who we know was Lieutenant Wilkes, put a foot over his eyes, and a short policeman cursed him out and struck him on the knee with their nightstick. He was then thrown into a police car where he placed his head between his knees. His other passenger, Calvin McKissack, was thrown into the vehicle with him. George says that Calvin started crying and told him to ask if they would take the handcuffs off, because they thought he thought they broke his shoulder, which is, they probably broke his shoulder. The police removed the handcuffs, and he was taken also to John Gaston Hospital and later to juvenile court around 6:30 a.m. Calvin McKissack testified that after he was ordered to step out of the truck with his hands up, he was hit in the head, shoulders, and knees. He said that George Barnes tried to outrun the police because he didn't have a license and he didn't want to lose his dad's truck. But after more police cars start showing up, he said that, you know, getting into the chase. He said Barnes said that he was going to stop because he didn't want to kill anybody. He's nervous at this point. Let me go on and stop. Let me try to stop, you know, because I'm not trying to kill police officers. I'm not trying to kill us, all this stuff. Anyway, another witness, patrolman Harold Sanderson, testified that he saw Michael Doherty, who is one of the officers charged with first degree murder, and William Graves, also charged with assault to murder, swinging nightsticks at the scene of the fatal beating of Elton Hayes. A second policeman, R.C. Kennedy, said he saw two city patrolmen swinging nightsticks and a sheriff's deputy holding a nightstick. And he saw patrolman Bonham holding a stick and walking toward Elton, and that patrolman Doherty and Davis were swinging nightsticks at the two youths. Patrolman James Smith testified that he saw Mr. Doherty and Graves swinging nightsticks in the ditch and saw Lieutenant Wilkes return with a nightstick, which he had apparently gotten from his car. Their testimony followed a dispatcher who said there was a missing tape of the police radio calls because of an equipment malfunction. How convenient. The prosecution's case took a devastating turn when Judge Hicks excluded from evidence five confessions by sheriff's deputies because the attorney general's office had not provided them to defense attorneys in a timely manner. This means that the DA's office did not give over that part of discovery, which is the entire investigation of the case and all the evidence in the case, like they should have, in a timely manner. And if these confessions came up in a trial, when the judge would, then the judge, he was right to exclude them, because you can't bring new evidence in the trial. The evidence that you bring into a trial, defense has to have, be privy to that evidence. You can't just bring new stuff up at trial, unless somebody opens the door for something. But we're talking about five confessions from sheriff's deputies that defense did not have privy to, that they didn't have knowledge of, or claim they didn't have knowledge of. Let's just say that. And, you know, the judge threw it out. He threw those confessions out. I wonder what they said. Anyway, prosecutors contended that they complied with Tennessee law. And Judge Higgs, although he was unhappy, reportedly unhappy, making this ruling, because he knew that it benefited the defense team, he had to comply with Tennessee law. He's a judge. He is there to make sure that everybody is following the law, and he himself as a judge also has to follow the law. And that's what he did. And he said, quote, "The eyes of the community are upon us. The position I'm being put in makes it appear as if I am defending the law officers on trial. I don't like that position, gentlemen. I'm unconcerned about the prosecution or the defense. I just want to make sure the defendants have a fair trial." End quote. Prosecutors continued on by calling a parade of police witnesses who had arrived at the scene. Captain Earl Clark said 10 cars were already there when he arrived. 10 cars, people, were already there when he arrived. And that he did not recall saying, "Get him," referring to Elton, "out of the road before the news media gets here." I bet you didn't recall. Of course you're not going to admit to something like that. Anyway, patrolmen Doherty and Bonham were the only defendants that testified. Bonham said he ran into a clothesline while checking the area and fell. After finding his eyeglasses and nightstick, he began walking toward the ditch, where he saw two groups of 8 to 10 officers in the ditch with the teenagers. He said the only time he touched Elton was to use his nightstick to prevent the youth from gouging out a wound. Sir, what do you mean? What do you mean you used your nightstick to prevent him from gouging out a wound? What wound? A wound to the officers or a wound to himself? It's not clear here. And it makes no sense. Doherty said he was at the scene no more than 2 minutes and remained near his squad car, and that he never saw the kids. Okay. After everyone rested their case, Judge Hicks refused to direct not guilty verdicts, which you can't do as a judge. You can't say, you can't direct a guilty verdict to the jury. Because what the fuck are we doing here on trial anyway? The jury is there to determine whether there is guilt, whether these men are guilty or not guilty. It's not for the judge to say, "I want y'all to direct them, not guilty." It's crazy. The prosecuting attorneys acknowledged the lack of strong testimony, as only a couple of the 25 police witnesses were helpful to the case. Why the fuck y'all put 25 police officers on the case and y'all didn't vet them? Most of the damaging testimony during the 7-week trial, 7 weeks, concerned Memphis patrolman Michael Doherty. Now, remember I told you, I just said, Doherty said he was on there for a couple minutes. He stayed at his car and he never saw the kids. And yet, most of the testimony was against him. Three police witnesses say they saw him in a ditch swinging his nightstick. None of the police witnesses saw sheriff's deputies, Lieutenant Wilkes or patrolman Roberts or Bonham, although they were charged with the murder. Now, let me just, as a side note, when my prosecutors are getting ready for a trial, any trial, I don't care if it's a drug trial or if it's a murder trial, we do pretrial meetings with all the witnesses. That includes lay witnesses. And when I say lay witnesses, I mean witnesses that are not law enforcement, and expert witnesses like the medical examiner, and police officers. We pretrial all these people. And we do this because we want to determine if we got 30 people that are witnesses, that gave statements, that have something to bring to this trial, we need to vet all these people and skim it down and determine who is the most helpful to this case. We're not just willy-nilly throwing those 30 people on the stand and not knowing what they're going to say or whether or not this person is going to help the case, whether they're going to hurt the case, all this stuff. We vet them so that we can skim the witness list down. And it doesn't seem like the prosecution in this case did that at all. It doesn't sound like they did that at all. They just threw these officers on the stand, and 25 officers, and only two of them were able to help. Absolutely nuts. Ridiculous. And really a waste of time. This trial was 7 weeks long. It might have been cut down if y'all would cut down 23 of those officers that did not help. Anyway. Child, I'm getting riled up. Let me chill out. Anyway, in their zeal to be comprehensive and thorough, the prosecution really, they probably confused the jury with all these witnesses, you know? And like I said, if you're going to bring 25 witnesses in the court, they got to bring some to the case. If they're not bringing anything to the case, I don't know what they're doing here. Anyway. This move by the prosecution, putting 25 police witnesses on the case, then only two of them helped, really muddled the case up. And it led to some suggestions that prosecution intentionally muddled the case as part of a corrupt justice system that set out from the beginning to make sure that no law enforcement officers would be held accountable in the death of Elton Hayes. The seven-week trial finally ended on December 7th, 1973, when the all-white jury of 12 men returned verdicts of not guilty. I'm not surprised by this because the prosecution really put a shitty case on. They really did. And also, let's keep in mind that this 1973, rather, and the case originated in 1971. I am not sure, I probably should have looked this up, but I am not sure that if TBI, Tennessee Bureau of Investigation, existed at that time. Maybe they did, maybe they didn't. That's not, a thing. That's not a thing right now to go into, but, the TBI, Tennessee Bureau of Investigation here in Memphis, they investigate all police involved incidents. So if it's a shooting or whatever, the TBI is going to get involved. Okay. So, but back in 1971, I'm not sure if, like I said, TBI existed. So essentially, the Memphis Police Department and Shelby County Sheriff's Department investigated this case, which involved their own officers, which is a clear conflict of interest. Okay. And when you're doing that, when you have these two departments doing that, and put that with this prosecutor who was clearly incompetent and didn't know how to put a case together. I'm not surprised that this all-white jury of men that it took them 13 and a half weeks to come up with came back with not guilty verdicts. Anyway, after the verdict, Lieutenant Wilkes, who had been charged with first-degree murder, the only black man involved in this he was charged with first degree murder. He stated, quote, "They had a legitimate charge, but they had the wrong men. Everyone knows there was a wrong done at the scene that night. If I knew who killed Mr. Hayes, I would have told it." You lie. "With 9 blows to the head, any one of those officers could have killed him." I would say that Wilkes at least knew who dealt the blows because they were all out there together. Plus, when you got 30 plus officers on the scene, you can't just pinpoint a few. In my opinion, every single person that was out there should have been charged. And I think that it should be noted that Lieutenant Wilkes was not one of the 25 officers that testified on behalf of the defense. And I would have to wonder why, since he was the lieutenant, why he did not testify. Following the verdicts, Shelby County Sheriff Roy Nixon immediately hired back the three deputies charged in the case and held a victory party in his office. Additionally, those officers were promoted, honey. Roberts and Bonham were promoted to the rank of sergeant and assigned to the detective division. Wilkes was promoted to captain, becoming second in command of the Sheriff's Department Fugitive Squad. And at the Memphis Police Department, Chief Bill Price stated that he felt sure that the acquitted Memphis officers would be reinstated if they applied. And while everybody was getting reinstated and getting a party on, celebrating and getting promoted, there was still no one to account for the death of Elton Hayes and the beatings of Calvin McKissack and George Barnes. These men got their jobs back, and Elton is lying in a grave with no one to account for his death. And let's not deny the fact that he was in fact killed by the police, who afterwards attempted to cover up their crimes by blaming his death on a traffic accident. After the judge read the acquittals on the assault to murder charge, spectators cheered. And one of the defendants, Davis, jumped to his feet and hugged the other defendants as bailiffs tried to restore order. Speaking for the defendants charged in the case, Lieutenant Wilkes said, again talking, "My men and myself hadn't done no wrong in our stumble bumble way to help somebody who was injured. And we got hit with a big one, murder charges. I'm innocent. I was innocent. And I never had anything to hide." The primary evidence against the deputies was blood on their uniforms. The deputy said they only touched Elton when they carried him to a squad car to be taken to John Gaston Hospital. Why didn't they just call an ambulance to transport him? Why they taking him to the ambulance? I don't know what protocol was back in 1971, but why are y'all taking a person by ambulance? I'm pretty sure he probably was passed out by this time, especially with those blows to the head. Why y'all didn't get an ambulance dispatched to come and take him out? I don't know. There's nothing in the research that I did that explains this. The policemen said policemen were swinging nightsticks in the ditch where they found Mr. Hayes with blood flowing from his head. So y'all just found him. Who were the policemen that were swinging nightsticks? Who are they? Police contended that the truck occupied by the teenagers had attempted to ram a squad car, and that when that was radioed to a dispatcher, dozens of cars took up the chase with as many as 40 law officers arriving at the scene after the truck slid into a ditch. Prosecutor said about 40 officers. I said 34 earlier, but prosecutor said about 40 officers were present at the scene when the fatal beating took place. But most of the police witnesses at the trial were vague. Those 23, they didn't bring nothing to the case. They claimed that the lighting was too poor to see the activities of the defendants. This was despite residents in the area testifying that it was well lit. Prosecutors came under fire for their handling of the case because it was very sloppy. And 6 weeks after the not guilty verdicts, Attorney General Phil Connally resigned, as he should have, because he really fucked this case up. The Smart City Memphis article, where I have gotten the bulk of my information about this case, stated that earlier that year, 1973, the District Attorney's Office started a conduct review team in hopes to deter excessive force by law enforcement and to investigate those cases. This is very similar, I imagine, to the Justice Review Unit that's just been started in the DA's office this year. But that was in 1973. This is 2023. It's been 40 years, and we are still dealing with police brutality, police shootings, and very little accountability in that area. I would love to have your comments on this case. I would love to hear your thoughts on this case. It's very similar to another case that just recently occurred here in Memphis. I will not name the case because I'm actually working on the case, so it's a conflict of interest for me. I don't want to mention it, but if you listen to this, if you read the information on the case, you will you'll know exactly what case I'm talking about. I got a lot of my information on this case. A lot of my research was done on this case, and the articles that I am quoting and getting my information from came from Smart City Memphis, the New York Times Archives, and the Black Panther Intercommunal News Service. You can look these links up, and I will put these links on my Bluff City Crime Facebook page. You can go and pull these articles up. You can look at the photos of the officers, the photos of the boys, Calvin McKissick, Elton Hayes, George Barnes. The photos, they have a photo in there of Elton Hayes at the funeral. And it's, for me, it's reminiscent of Emmett Till. Just in regard to the beating and face swelling and all of that. So you can go to those sites, just type in the sources that I've just named and put in Elton Hayes, and they're going to pop right up. I'm going to put some of this on my, like I said, on my page anyway. Thank you guys for listening to Bluff City Crime. You can find me on Instagram. You can find me on Facebook. You can find me on TikTok. And you can listen to my podcast on Spotify and whatever streaming service that you love listening to your podcast on. So if you're on Apple, if you're on Google, whatever, I'm there. Look for me, Bluff City Crime Podcast. Thank you for listening. I am Dr. Natasha Burnett, your host. We'll be back next time. Bye.